Detroit, I gotta admit, I'm trying really hard, Kevin Barker. Really, really hard. To not look at John Schneider's description of Jordan Romano's injury. Quote, not bouncing back as he hoped. I'm trying very hard not to look at that and look at Aaron Boone's comments when Garrett Cole was hurt, how he, quote, had a hard time bouncing back. I'm trying very hard not to, you know, two guys with right elbow inflammation, two guys, MRIs that showed no structural damage. Now, as far as we know, Jordan Romano isn't going to need to go and visit one of the, you know, one of the hack and slice guys, the way Garrett Cole did. But we know today now Jordan Romano shut down for at least 3 days with right elbow inflammation. Eric Swanson is shut down with right forearm tightness for a day or two. You know, look, organizations always, it's not that they underplay things initially. It's just that there's always an element of unknown with this. So they're very seldom is a manager going to come out and say, yeah, the guy's got right elbow inflammation. If we get him back in August, we're lucky. Generally, they're not going to say that. What's your read, though, on these two injuries? So I would argue the two most important relievers in the Blue Jays bullpen at this time of the spring.
Yeah, you could argue that. Look, it's not good. Like, it's this time of the year. You know, you're 28th. It's time to roll. And whenever you, you know, hear two of your better arms out of the pen that you're going to count on to, you know, get after it. Like, from when the bell rings, they were expecting to give them dudes the ball a lot, and now you can't do that. Now their guys got to step up. You know, the quality of the depth, just they're not oozing it, you know, and they were counting on these guys to do a ton, and this is not good. Like, I understand what they're saying, and this is John's and the organization's job to sort of walk people off the plank, but when you hear dudes' arms swelling up and elbows and forearms, it's never a good thing. So they're trying to work through it and figure out the best way to get everybody raring and ready to go, for sure.
We're going to deal with this, and Jose Berríos also being named the opening day starter. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But this is a fascinating game this afternoon in Dunedin, the Orioles and the Blue Jays. The Orioles lineup: Jackson Holliday, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser, Tyler Nevin, Kyle Stowers, Kobe Mayo, Heston Kjerstad, Connor Norby. I want to bring in Ben McDonald, Orioles analyst. Ben, I don't know. This almost sounds to me like an opening day 2025 lineup, maybe minus Gunnar Henderson for the Baltimore Orioles. This is quite a thing to bring a lineup like this on the road.
Yeah, I mean, look, you guys are going to get a look at, you know, Prospect Central, if you will. You know, it's a lot of our top prospects: Kobe Mayo, of course, Kjerstad, Connor Norby's had two great years in the minor league. Jackson Holliday, who was a world beater last year, continues to perform well at 20 years old, you know. And so it's not many records in there other than Rutschman and Westberg, but it's some very talented young guys for sure. So they'll get a good test against Chris Bassitt, who I absolutely love and who is coming into his own for sure in his 33, 34, 35-year age seasons, you know. So,
hey, could you leave like three of them in Dunedin when you go back? I mean, you can have George Springer. If you leave me three of those dudes, I'll let you keep Rutschman, but if you can give me three other guys, you can have George. Now, you'd do that, wouldn't
you? There was a time. Look, there's good problems to have if you're trying to make decisions in Baltimore right now on who makes this club. Because there was a time 4 or 5 years ago that we had, you know, and it wasn't no fault of their own. We had high AAA players at the big league level, and we were taking a beating every day, you know. And now it's good problems to have because it's the number one minor league system in baseball, as you guys know, and some uber talented guys. And look, I got to give credit to Mike Elias at the front office. You know, they've drafted well, they've developed well, and look, the Orioles are set to be, you know, in the mix of playoff hunt, I think, for the next 4 or 5 years for sure.
Ben, is Jackson Holliday the opening day second baseman?
Gosh, you know, I knew you guys were going to ask me that. Part of me wants to say yes because he's performed well. You can knock a little bit on the fact he's only walked twice and he's punched out 14 times. But my gosh, I mean, he's still hitting 300 after the year that he had last year. The only thing that scares me a little bit, guys, is I keep wanting to go back. This kid just turned 20 years old. He just turned 20, and he's taking on a new position, and, you know, everybody says, well, it's still the middle infield. No, but it's different. The angles of the ball off the bat are different. Turn a double play is totally different. He doesn't have a ton of reps over there at second base. So I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to give it a 50-50 at best right now. He makes this club. I think he's deserving of making it, but I think there's some things he's got to work on, too. So I don't know which way they're going to go. And I don't know if the Orioles know what they're going to do as of yet. I think it's going to be a last-minute decision, honestly.
Ben, he's a really good player. Like, how do you sell that to him? You call him in the office, you're going to send him down. What do you tell him to work on? That's the thing. I've been sent down. I'm sure you went through some hiccups in your career. The conversation is not the easiest. You know, Jackson doesn't care if he's 20. He just knows he's really good. He can play second every day for probably the best team in the American League East, and you could argue the best team in the American League. How do you sell it? What are they telling them to, if they do send him down, to work on when he goes down to AAA?
Well, I could pick on a couple things. I'd be picking, right? I mean, I could say, look, Jackson, you know, you've got 40 at-bats this spring. You punched out 14 times. Okay, that's more than one out of every three at-bats you've struck out. I need you to be a little more selective at the plate. I need you to figure out a way to get on base a little bit more. The other thing I could focus on him is say, listen, you've been a shortstop your entire life. You hardly ever played second base. We want you to be a big league second baseman. We got Gunnar Henderson, who's 6'4", runs like a deer, throws like the wind out there, and he's going to play shortstop. So I need you to be very comfortable at second base. I want you to go down and get some reps at second base, be more comfortable turning the double play at second base, the angles off the bat, the bunt plays, all that kind of stuff, cutoffs and relays. You need a little bit more time. So I can make up a few things to send him down for sure, you know. But, look, the Orioles have Jordan Westberg. They got Wong. They got Mateo. They got Urias. I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches of middle infielders out there too, you know. And, of course, you got Connor Norby, who's nobody's talking about, you know, down in the minor leagues, who plays second base. And all he did last year was have 65 extra base hits at AAA, and he hit .290, you know. And so there's a lot of dudes down there right now. But I could figure out some reasons to send him down. But I really think it's 50-50 at this point right now. I would not be surprised either way, to be honest with you.
Ben, does it matter that the Orioles are 18-5 in Grapefruit League play?
Sure. Everybody says, well, spring doesn't matter.
Barker says that all the time. I disagree with him all the time about that.
The players and coaches that are saying that are the ones that aren't having good springs and aren't having good, you know, wins and losses. That's the people that are saying spring. Look, I'm a big believer in building momentum. I think it's important to go out. Now, for veteran guys, maybe not so much, but if you're trying to make the team like a Jackson Holliday or a Keegan Aiken or some guys that's trying to make, it absolutely matters. It has to matter or you don't make the team, you know? And so, now, if you're a Craig Kimbrell who's eighth in Major League Baseball and saves, and you have a couple rough outings in spring, I don't think anybody's worried about that, you know? But if you're a younger guy that's trying to make a ball club, I think it absolutely matters on both sides of the ball, whether you're a pitcher or a position player. So I think it does. I don't put a whole lot of weight into spring, but I do think it matters in some cases for sure.
Ben, it seems like the Orioles have their rotation figured out. It seems like there's a couple of spots available in the pen, and they're trying to finalize who the fourth outfielder will be. Do you have an answer for the latter two, right? The two spots in the bullpen and the fourth outfielder?
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, I think 7 of the 8 spots in the bullpen, in my opinion, are sealed tight. I think Kimbrel's in. Cano, the all-star from last year, is in. CNL Perez, the left-hander, has struggled in spring, but he's been really solid for the Orioles the last 2 years. Danny Coulomb, who had an outstanding year in the bullpen, is in as well. Mike Bauman has been unbelievable in spring. He's not allowed a run. He's in. Dylan Tate, who did not pitch at all last year for the Orioles but had a wonderful 2022 campaign as a setup guy, he's looked really good. He's not allowed a run either. I think he is in. And I think the left-hander, Keegan Aiken, who is not allowed a run in spring training for the Orioles, I think he is in as well for the Orioles. He's been really good. He'll be your third left-hander. So that's 7 guys right there. Now, the 8th guy, I think it's out of a lot of different people. I think Jacob Webb is out of options. He was a big part of the Orioles down the stretch last year. Didn't perform extremely well in the playoffs, but I think he's got a leg up of being there. I think Brian Baker had some big moments for the Orioles the last 2 years. He could be that guy. I think Nick Vespi, the left-hander, could be in that mix as well. There's a couple veterans. You know, the Suarez guys are in the running, left-hander and right-hander as well in there too. But I think 7 of the 8 are sealed pretty tight. As far as the rotation goes, it's pretty set for the Orioles. You know, obviously you guys know we lost Bradish, and John Means is running about a month behind schedule, hoping to get Bradish back at some point in time before the All-Star break. But obviously it's going to be Burns, you know, at the front, and then Grayson Rodriguez and Dean Kramer. You know, and then Tyler Wells and, of course, Cole Irving, who you guys will see today. And both Wells and Irving have been starters, obviously, at the big league level. They weren't penciled in to be starters, say, 2 months ago, but they are now. But it's nice to be able to fall back on some guys that have starters experience and have success at the big league level being starters. And so that's kind of going to be the rotation for the Orioles. And then we'll wait and see when John Means gets back and when Kyle Bradish gets back, kind of what it looks like after that.
Ben, I know you got to run and do a production meeting. I thank you for taking time out to talk to us today. Always great to talk to you. Have a great rest of the spring, and we'll do this again in the regular season, my friend. Be well.
Yeah,
hey, nice talking to you guys. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
See you, buddy.
Ben McDonald, Orioles analyst. The Jays lineup, by the way, today: Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, IKF, and Biggio. Again, Kevin, we've talked about this. Now, the Jays had yesterday off, but John Schneider is you're seeing. You're seeing opening day lineups. I'm not mistaken, the fourth game in a row where basically the everyday core is going to be there. Can we talk about the Orioles lineup? You know, which is basically this lineup might as well be sponsored by Baseball America. I mean, seriously, it's like, you know, if you took eight of these guys, you'd have the best minor league system in baseball right now, 1-8. So it's going to be a great game. 1 o'clock on Sportsnet. With Dan Shulman and Buck Martinez, and of course Hazel May, and it's also on Sportsnet Plus and Fan 590 streaming live with Chris LaRue and Ben Shulman. So yeah, there you go. Kevin, I think most of the focus today though will be in the pitching. Again, for those of you who may not know this, Jordan Romano is dealing with right elbow inflammation. He was given an anti-inflammatory injection today. He's going to be shut down for 3 days, and then he will ramp back up. The MRI showed no structural issues. Eric Swanson has right forearm tightness. Again, an MRI, no injury or inflammation. No throwing for a day or two. Joey Votto, we talked about, hit a home run, rolled his ankle, stepping on a bat in the dugout. He will be taking BP with his teammates in the field today. He's getting treatment day to day. There's no timetable for his return, but it really doesn't seem as if there's a tremendous amount of concern. Kevin, I want to go deeper into the pitching, and it's something we're going to talk about with Buck Martinez later on, but I want to play a clip from Chris Bassett, who is actually just, as if he needed something else to do, he's just been named a co-host on Chris Rose's YouTube show and podcast. This was Chris Bassett yesterday, and they were talking, he and Chris Rose were talking about the number of pitching injuries we're seeing in baseball. I just saw the Minnesota Twins have just slapped Yoan Duran on the IL with an oblique injury. And this is Chris Bassett talking a little bit about why he sees this or where he sees pitching going and why he thinks that perhaps teams have taken their eye off long term in favor of the short term with pitching.
Of course injuries are going to happen at an alarming rate because you have a natural human body that's not made to say throw 95, 96, 97. They're made to throw 91, 92, and that's okay. But we're not teaching pitching, we're teaching stuff. And I feel pretty comfortable talking about this because I feel like we do an unbelievable job here in Toronto of not doing that. Like, I would say we're one of the very few teams. I'll give a lot of credit here. I think Texas is not like that either anymore. I really do. I think that's why they had so much success last year, is they started kind of going away from that. I just think we have to get back, and I think we have to start setting the precedent in MLB where we care about pitching rather than throwing.
That's coming from a guy, Kevin, who throws 103 different pitches from 105 different arm angles. But his Chris Bassett's point in that interview, and it was Texas was the team that he mentioned, and that would be Mike Maddox would be their pitching coach, I believe. But the point he mentioned is that organizations, and he broadened it later, because of the emphasis and the input of analytics, organizations are teaching stuff. They're not teaching pitching, right? In other words, we hear all along, the guys, you know, going into the pitching lab and developing a new pitch and a new grip and all this stuff. you know, look, injuries happen all the time. I don't know if there's more pitching injuries this year than normal. It sure seems like there is from a distance. Now, you played, well, you know, and you've spent time around there. What are you seeing? Like, what are people talking about?
Yeah,
when it comes to pitching.
I don't think Pete Walker reminds me saying this, but I have had conversations about him, and I give an example of Bowden Francis. They're, you know, it's no secret that, you know, a certain number of pitches velocity for him tends to fall off. You know, it's high octane for a certain amount of pitches, and then after that certain number, it falls off dramatically. And the message that they continue to give him is, don't chase velocity. We want you to be a pitcher. We want you to get through five or six innings as a starter by, you know, when the velocity starts to go down and you're turning around, and they all do it. We all watch the games. We all see them. You know, they'll throw one, it don't come off the fingers, right? They turn around, look at the scoreboard, and if that number's not what they want it to be, then the next pitch you hear it a little bit differently, right? It's grunt. It's the mechanics are a little bit more off. They're trying to chase that velocity, and they don't want, you know, certain guys to do that. That's why, you know, I think Chris is able to say that's because he's been in the room, and they're preaching that. They want guys when, you know, instead of turning around and always looking at that, you know, fall back on your mechanics, you know, finish it better, you know, break it off more, like get after dude's weaknesses instead of always, you know, and trying to overthrow it and throw it to the catcher. So yeah, that's what I hear. I mean, he's spot on with that. But again, it's having a player buy into that. Cause if I can throw 97, Jeff, why wouldn't I want to do it all the time?
Yeah.
And if I'm not hitting that number, I'm thinking something's up. Why am I not hitting that number? And you're a human being. So there's a fine line there, right? It's you're that guy, you're that good because you throw that hard. And when you don't throw that hard, how is it that you overcome it? And that's the thing they're going through, and not everybody's capable of doing that. So, you know, it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to actually go out and apply it, right? It's one thing to try that in a spring training game when nobody really cares and it's more about you staying healthy than you getting hurt. It's another thing of doing it when you're facing the Rays in the first four games, or you go to Houston, who just, you know, you're trying to keep it away from the Crawford box. How do you do that with velocity, right? With making sure that thing really breaks and you really got to snap it off. And how do you do that? You overcompensate for some things. So yeah, that's the thing they have, right? It's, you know, the khakis and every wire that's ever been hooked up to all of these pitches are telling them that if you do it this way, you're going to maximize what you do best. And when you're not, how do you back off and just say, I'm good enough to get a dude out? By just being mechanically sound and staying within yourself and making sure it breaks the way it's supposed to break. I say a lot of the times, good luck with that. But again, this gets back to, and I'll continue to say it, Pete Walker's the best pitching coach in baseball. And if he can say it and continue to say it in the way he says it and get these dudes to buy into it, hopefully it works out. And hopefully the main guys stay healthy long enough that they can contribute and help this team go where they want to go.
Yeah, the conversation with Chris Bassitt was fascinating because one of the points Chris made, look, people, I know people don't necessarily like to hear this, but there's an economic aspect to sports. There's a reason in the NFL that running backs – you know, no longer, it's no longer a prime position. Things evolve. Positions get a different, you know, take on a different economic value. And I think, you know, Chris made this point and other people have made this point as well, that you almost get the sense based on what happened in the free agent market this year and based on what else we've seen, that the approach organizations are taking right now is basically, you know, we're going to just look short term, and we're going to burn the hell out of you in search of velocity right now. And then when you're done, well, we'll DFA you. You know, we'll find somebody else who can come along and do it. And yeah. You know, look, and just look at the highest level of pitching salaries in baseball, and the number of those guys that aren't going to be around on opening day, amount of guys that are being hurt, like. These are businessmen running this team, and these are analytical businessmen, and if they can get this at 1.5 million, or if I can get this at 4 million, I'd rather do that at that and maybe get two of those guys at 4 million than get this from one guy at 30 million. And I think there's a concern there that pitchers are almost getting to be disposable, burn the hell out of them and then get rid of them.
There's no question. I mean, again, you look at Swanson and Romano. If they throw 91, is the split finger that good? Is the slider that good? Absolutely not. They go hand in hand. So, you know, it's again, it's easy to say it out loud, and it's easy for a Chris Bassett to say it because he's got 8 different pitches and add and subtract the way he does, and you know he can throw a 64-mile-an-hour breaking ball. Well, those two dudes in the bullpen can't do that. So it's like it depends about who you're talking to, who you're talking about, and you're trying to get the best out of those guys, and you do it with velocity. That's why they're wanting these guys to do it. It's hard to hit, and if you can throw it, you're supposed to throw it, and to ask them not to throw it and back off a little bit's not the easiest thing to sell.
So, again, we'll wait. We'll have a better handle on this probably by Friday. But Kevin, if Jordan Romano and or Eric Swanson, if Jordan Romano can't go, and let's give Eric Swanson the benefit of the doubt and say that he's able to go. How does John Schneider play this, do you think, if there's a setback with Jordan Romano? I mean, if he isn't available for, you know, the first 3 games of the year or the first 6 games of the year.
Well, I would think Chad Green's going to get some love there. He's going to get some run at the end of the game. Jimmy Garcia is one of those guys like that do have some experience down there that can give you more than 3 outs, which is a big deal, right? So I would think they're going to lean on that, but they can't lean on it very long. Mm-hmm. Like I know they want Chad Green in that higher role in the 9th inning sometime this year. I don't think it's the beginning of the season,
right?
Because they have Jordan Romano. Like Jordan Romano is really, really good. Now it's again, this just sort of comes full circle. We talked about this yesterday with the offense. Seeing the offense do the things they're doing in spring training, we just heard Ben McDonald talk about the 18-5 matters to these guys, right? Because they're doing what it takes to win the game. They're, you know, what they're doing off the field's translating between the lines, and they're winning no matter what time of the year it is. So offensively, you're going to have to score more runs. Like, this is sort of screaming that way. And I think the organization as a whole sort of knew this was coming. You know, they don't want to see their main guys getting hurt, but I think they were expecting it. Like, it's part of the baseball. Yeah. And this means other parts of your game have to pick it up. And offensively, that's why they went out and got Turner. So Dalton Varsho's not hitting cleanup. Like, it's a fact. You have that guy doing it, you're going to score more runs. You know, the 4.5 run a game this season is not going to work. It's going to have to be somewhere in that 5 range. And I think they can do it with especially the guys they got in the top 4 spots. And the way they're going, you mentioned it, the lefty-righty thing is a big deal from the 5-hole to the 9-hole. So everybody's going to have to do their part to win these games. And now you're just adding on to the fuel to the fire when your main guys out of the pen are dropping like flies.
So this would appear to even put more of a focus on Kevin Gausman. We know he threw his side session. What are the plans for Kevin going forward? And are you getting the sense that the Jays think that he might be, well, I think we've already said he probably won't start he won't be starting in the first series in Tampa, right? We expect him in the Houston series, the second series of the year. Could that change, do you think?
But I don't think so. I mean, you would certainly just by the numbers alone, right? He threw 23 pitches, and they're trying to work him up to 60. Like it's.
And when's his next outing? Sorry?
It's a couple of days from now. I'm not sure if it's 3 days from now or a couple of days from now. I know he threw a pin yesterday, which that's light stuff, right? He's going to be in live action. That's with a dude standing in there trying to hit a homer off him. Like, that's a little different, right? That means the heart rate's going to go up, the arm speed's going to go up, the mechanics, the finish, like it all has to be there. And, you know, again, hopefully because of what's happening in the pen, they don't use that to rush a dude like Gausman. Remember, mm-hmm. He's 33. He's thrown a lot. And, you know, hopefully they think that they have enough depth in the rotation. You know, it may not be as quality as everybody wants it to be, but hopefully they got enough depth to sort of to weather the storm here a little bit. And from what I understand and the people that I talk to, and just by adding the numbers, that if they can get Gausman in this outing coming up to 60 pitches, you would think that sort of will wrap around, right? It's maybe you make a start the 20th, you make a start the 25th, sort of the 30th lines up to somewhere if he has to skip a couple of days to get a couple of more days rest, that would line up to that first game in Houston. But you know, again, it's not rushing it. It's not blowing out the pen. Mm. So there's a couple of things you have to step back and think about there, right? Is you want to make sure when you hand him the ball and he's trying to get a legit big league hitter out, when the heart rate goes up, that he's fully healthy, that he can do that, and he's going to take the ball every 5 days after that. And also you got to think about the pen. It's too early in the season to be blowing that thing out. So there's a lot of factors go into this. And again, we don't want to harp on this too much, but score runs. That will eliminate all the thinking and the worry. And, you know, they're trying to pull their hair out here to try and figure out just how to get off to a good start by how they're making out their lineup and the guys they're putting in there. And it is, if you're hot and you're, you know, showing John some things, you're going to hit from 5 to 9 in the spots that will help that team win a baseball game. And you like that part of it. It's just, boy, it's, you know, I saw John walk by and he looked like he was a couple years older. I mean, and
he hasn't even had to make his first pitching decision in game yet.
Well, he laughed and winked and said, man, I can't wait to the 28th.
I'll tell you
that tells you anything.
You know what I've been saying? Spring training, 2 days. That's all you need. 2 days. Get the season going from that point on. Jose Berríos gets the start. Probably not much of a surprise given Kevin Gausman's status anyhow. But, you know, look at where this guy is this year, Kevin, compared to where he was last year. Coming off the WBC, got his you-know-what lit up in the WBC. There was, based on the performance he'd shown the year before, there was some concern going into the spring to begin with. And now he's developing a new pitch. You know, knock on wood, he's kind of answered the bell. That's kind of a cool story seeing this dude get the opening day start, isn't it? Just compared to where we were last year.
Yeah, it's predictable. That's the whole thing is, you know, you add quality to the predictability. That's, you know, you can't beat that. That's why they went out and dropped 130 large on him is because they understand that. You know, again, you don't want him to abuse the cutter. I know it's a nice talking point for us, and everybody likes to throw that in the mix. And, you know, how the season ended and why they were trying to maneuver around the lefties that nobody had ever heard of for the Minnesota Twins. And, you know, how dare you do that? That's sort of, for me anyway, you know, you can sort of put two and two together and realize why. You know, you like to hear what he was saying about when he added the cutter and when he started throwing it, but it's just funny how, you know, they came to spring training talking about it as much as mm-hmm. they've talked about it, especially the way the season ended. That's a nice little toy to throw to a lefty. That, just put it to you that way. So he ain't going to abuse that thing. I mean, he's, you know, he's trying to figure out ways to be a little bit more unpredictable against lefties. That's the thing is, how do you get lefties out more consistent and will allow you to get a little deeper in games? And he understands now that what's going on around him is some things, and he needs to carry the load for a little while. And I think they have full confidence in him with everything that he's doing. He's in better shape. I know you roll your eyes at that, but he is.
And no, I'm not rolling my eyes at that at all.
That will maintain velocity. That will allow him to be mechanically sound on the slurve, the slider, the curveball. There's three different ones there. Adding the cutter, the changeup, you know, the cutter, the changeup, the curveball to lefties, the fastball command to all quadrants. He can elevate that. The two same with the front hip. Like, he's got a lot happening, and he needs to be in good shape and mechanically sound to be able to execute that to lefties and righties. So they feel confident. I think as a fan of the Blue Jays, you should feel confident and be happy that you have him, especially with what's going on with the other guys.
Kevin, I'm going to let you scoot. We got you down there in Florida for a couple more days. We'll do this again tomorrow. Thanks for this. And enjoy the baseball day. Like I said, for a Grapefruit League game, that's a pretty good lineup. There's two pretty good lineups out there.
It is. I'm taking my son to the game today. He is very excited to watch the Orioles. That's the first thing. And I did see
he's excited to watch the Orioles.
He absolutely is. Yeah. And I did. His favorite player is Vladimir Guerrero Jr., so he's also happy to see Vladdy. But I did see Joey Votto taking batting practice. He's walking around like nothing happened. He's not limping.
Yeah.
He's taking swings. He's staying in a big part of the field. He's got that finish that it looked like when he hit the home run off of Weaver. I don't want to speak for Joey, but hopefully they've weathered that storm, because offensively it is all hands on deck. You know, I think the theme is to do damage. If Joey Votto can add to the damage, I think they will welcome that as soon as possible. So hopefully, fingers crossed, there's no bats laying around.
There you go.
And he can get it down and get it singing.
Most important job today, Blue Jays bat boy. Thanks for this, Kevin. Be well.
See you guys.
All righty. Kevin Barker, co-host of Blair and Barker. A reminder that effective a week today, next Tuesday, we'll be on 2 to 4 on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet, which is sort of going to coincide nicely with the shutdown of the major highway in Toronto. for kilometers. So just going to make commute interesting. Better in the afternoon, I suppose, than in the morning. 107 is the first pitch today. The Baltimore Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays. It's an opening day lineup for the Blue Jays. Chris Bassett's on the mound. It's a lineup loaded with prospects for the Baltimore Orioles. Cole Irvin's on the mound for them. Buck Martinez and Dan Schulman will have the call of the game today. Buck Martinez joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll have Blue Jays baseball for you on the tube, on the app, and on the website today as the Jays take on the Baltimore Orioles at 1 o'clock in Grapefruit League action. From Dunedin, Chris Bassett on the mound for the Blue Jays, Cole Irvin for the Orioles. The Orioles sending along a lineup of prospects, Jackson Holliday, Adley Rutschman, he's not a prospect, Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser, Tyler Nevin, Kyle Stowers, Kobe Mayo, Heston Kjerstad, and Connor Norby. For the Blue Jays, George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Justin Turner, Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk, Kevin Kiermaier, IKF, and Kevin Biggio. Buck Martinez and Dan Schulman will have the call of the game today, along, of course, with Hazel May. And Buck Martinez joins us on Blair and Barker. Buck, thanks for taking time out to talk to us today. This, by my count, is, I guess, maybe the, I don't know, fourth game in a row where John Schneider has got kind of the A lineup out there playing together. And I know you made a point in this in the telecast. You're a big fan of this, aren't you? Like, when you reach a certain point in spring training, you like seeing the everyday guys out there together.
Yeah, I sure do, Jeff. I think it's important that they play games together. You know, I've talked about this often where the game itself is an industry. We have taught individuals their skills, but we rarely ask them to play as a team, especially in spring training. And I think it's important that you play as a team before you start the regular season. And I applaud John and his coaching staff, what they have done, because the regulars have been out there every day. And it's important to see the guy ahead of you in the lineup and, you know, watch how they pitch to him. And, you know what I think about watching video and all that? You got to watch the game. The game itself is one you're playing in. And I think when these guys are playing in a spring training atmosphere, they get a chance to get some feedback from that guy ahead of them and maybe even the guy behind him. So I think it's a good thing.
From what you've been able to see so far, what has Justin Turner's impact been on this lineup?
It's been dramatic. And not only because of his presence in the lineup, but because of his contribution in the clubhouse, the conversations he's having. Justin Turner has such a great reputation in the game, and he's earned that reputation over the years that when he speaks, everybody listens, whether you're George Springer or Kevin Biggio or Bo Bichette, Vladdy Guerrero. When Justin Turner talks about hitting, you want to listen, and that's kind of like the same role that Don Mattingly has. When Donnie Baseball talks, everybody listens, and the same is true with Justin Turner. So, you know what? For so long, this team has had a lot of good players, but they haven't had that one alpha dog that can, kind of call everybody together and say, hey, we can't play like that. We can't make mistakes like that. And when a player does that, that has much more impact on the team than a manager or coach saying the same thing.
You know, it's interesting hearing you say that because I asked someone else about this, and you know, I think maybe we kind of overlooked this because my argument was, look, Vladdy and Bo, they're the guys. They've been here forever. It's their team. And the point this person made was, you know what? Sometimes you need a guy who comes in from the outside with a ring and a reputation who can kind of, you know, it's almost like you bring a fresh set of eyes and a new voice. And if you have the right personality, which Justin Turner does, you know, you fit in seamlessly into the clubhouse.
Yeah, and you know what? Like I said, he's had such a great career, and you know, playing with the Dodgers, I mean, that gets you extra credibility. There's no question about it. Tack on the World Series in 2020. But the one thing, and you know, talking to John Schneider, this team all of a sudden, all spring long, is starting to talk about the right things in the dugout, not about hey, I didn't get a hit or hey, I struck out. It's hey, we got to get that run in from third. Hey, we got to get that runner over to second. Hey, we got to do this. It's more about team-oriented things than it ever been before. So I think he brings a dramatic aspect of that. You know, everybody talks about the war and the presence and the RBI, but it's about the intangible things that he calls his teammates out on. And you know what? I think Joey Votto will do the same thing once he gets healthy and once he gets on this team. To have Votto and Turner on this team could be invaluable.
We're starting to see over the course of the past week as well a little bit of power demonstrated in games. Home runs. Home runs are good any time of the year. I think people will tell you they're good in spring training as well. Is that a product, do you think, of this approach? I don't know. Does being more comfortable allow you to hit more home runs? I don't know.
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. But I think what Donnie Mattingly is teaching is, hey, get yourself a good pitch to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, Bo can hit any pitch in any part of the strike zone and pitches out of the strike zone for base hits. But when he gets focused and brings that pitcher over to the heart of the plate, that's when he can do a lot of damage. Same is true with Vladdy. And now you're going to have a guy like Justin Turner sitting next to you in between at bats saying, hey, man, you went after that pitch, and I know you got a single to right, but bring him over into the heart of the plate so you can do more damage. And, you know, like I said, when you have a teammate and a peer telling you these things on the bench, it has so much more impact than a coach saying, hey, man, you got to get a good pitch to hit. And they'll kind of slough that off. But when your teammate tells you that, that's going to have a dramatic impact.
It's pretty clear that Danny Jansen is not good. Well, he won't be with the team, at least initially. Alejandro Kirk is going to have to shoulder a lot of the load behind the plate. We're hearing a lot of good things about Alejandro Kirk this year. The performance, the production in spring training has been good. Give us your catcher's eye view of where Alejandro Kirk is right now compared to last year.
No, it is dramatically different. You know, he came down to Dunedin in the middle of January this year. And last year, remember, he and his wife were waiting on the birth of his child, and he never got to spring training until later, and he never really got going. He never really caught up. And I think this year he knew he had to get off to a good start, and he came down, and he's in pretty good shape. He's swinging the bat very well. And this is the Kirky we saw 2 years ago, where he's really having good at-bats. He's having good swing decisions, and he looks good behind the plate. You know, pitchers love throwing to both Danny and Alejandro, and I think, you know, I don't think that's a real concern. You know, you want Danny back, and I think the news has been very good on Jansen because he's not been immobilized. He's probably going to start throwing on Saturday, so that's good news. And he's not going to start the season on the active roster, but I don't think it's going to be too long into April before he comes back. But getting back to Kirk, I like where he's at the plate. He's swinging good pitches, hitting the ball the opposite field, and I think he's got a lot of confidence right now.
You know, we played earlier in the show a clip from Chris Bassett, who was on Chris Rose's show, and talking about the number of injuries we're seeing, number of pitching injuries we're seeing this spring. And, of course, you know, Chris made an interesting comment about, he said, I think that perhaps too many organizations are trying to teach stuff and not teach pitching. You know, obviously, Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah, they're behind. They're Kevin Gausman, are led to believe, is on the right path coming back. We found out today Jordan Romano has right elbow inflammation. Eric Swanson has right forearm tightness. Buck, you've been going to spring training for years. I keep saying this. You've managed. You've broadcasted. Obviously, you've played. Is this a bigger concern than it should be right now? The state of starting pitching, or is there something that really needs to be looked at here?
Well, you've teed it up for me, Jeff, and I don't know if you did it on purpose or
I
not.
Didn't.
But now, you know what? And Chris Bassett is right. And if anybody looks at Chris Bassett, you look at Marco Estrada's career, you look at these guys that pitched for so long, Maddox and Glavine and Smoltz and those guys, they pitched. Now we have, TrackMan in the bullpens. We have video in the bullpens, and a pitcher throws a pitch. He looks up at the scoreboard, see how hard he threw it. They're not ever concerned about getting soft contact, and that's one thing that Pete Walker and John Schneider have talked about this year is they're going to have to get away to get soft contact, quick outs, and quicker resolutions to at-bats without throwing 100% effort on every pitch. And I think that's the problem. If you look around baseball, I mean, the injuries are through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pitching injuries because they're chasing velocity and spin rate. And now, you know, we brought in the sweeper, and all of a sudden you're manipulating your hand a little different. That's putting strain on your elbow. And, you know, nobody – and I watch bullpens every day down here, and everybody throws 100% in their bullpen. Well, years ago, guys used to use a bullpen just as a fine-tuning exercise, not trying to chase velocity. Oh, yeah, he threw 97 in his bullpen. I don't care. Could he locate his pitches? Can he change speeds? Can he get his secondary pitches over? That's how you win games. And you're going to see that in spades today with Chris Bassitt. He's probably going to throw 80 pitches today, and he's going to throw all of his pitches, and he's going to mess with the timing of the hitters. You know, Chris Bassett's only had one season with an ERA over 4 in his career, and that's when he blew out his arm. So, I mean, there's something to be said about execution of pitches as opposed to chasing velocity and spin rate. I think those are so overrated that we're causing a lot of injuries because that's how guys are evaluated in the minor leagues and how they get promoted to the big leagues.
I know, Buck, you're somebody who was really heavily involved with the Players Association as well. You know, as well as anybody. There's a lot of economic angles to a lot of things that go on in professional sports. And one of the points that Chris Rose and Bassitt were making is the idea that maybe teams are a little too, you know, look, there's an elite group of starting pitchers. Put them aside. But teams are more interested in getting big stuff from somebody in a 2-year span. And then, you know, if you have to DFA him, you DFA him, you bring another guy along. And the point is that there's so much short-term thinking and there's not enough long-term thinking. Do you see that being a factor as well? And when did that change? Like, when did we start going away from wanting a guy to have a long career to a guy, we want a guy to throw 101 right now. And, you know, if he has TJ at the end of the year, well, we'll go into free agency and get somebody else. It just seems like it's changed.
Well, it has changed, and there's a couple of things. And it probably started to change when free agency came in, because before players could move around freely after free agency, you had to think about the long term because you were going to have this player in your organization throughout his career. So you had to manage his long-term career. And now with the advent of the radar gun and TrackMan and Rapsodo and all that stuff, everybody is chasing numbers. Well, numbers don't win games. Outs win games. And how you can get outs? Jack Morris said it when he first came to the Blue Jays in 92. He told Pat Henkin, you know how you win in this league, kid? You stay out on the mound longer than the other guy. And that's what the starting pitcher mentality always used to be. And now it's like, hey, you give me 5 innings and I'm thrilled. That doesn't work. You have to think about the long-term longevity of a guy's career, how he can change speeds, and how he can locate. I think location has been overlooked for so long, but it's coming back into vogue. When you think about the guys that are really successful, they can locate their pitches, first, second, third pitches, in the strike zone at any time. That's how you get weak contact, and that's how you pitch deeper into games.
Last question for you before we let you run. Jose Berríos has been named the opening day starter. Probably no surprise, certainly given Kevin Gausman's status. But, you know, Kevin Barker and I were talking about this in the last segment. Looking at where Jose Berríos was last spring compared to where he was now, you know, last spring coming off that awful short stint in the WBC, coming on the heels of a not very satisfactory year. And yet, here he is. You look at him in spring training. You know, he's always in great shape, if possible. Buck, he looks in better shape. He's working on a new pitch. He's the opening day starter. It's like night and day, isn't it, between where he is now and where he was last year in spring?
Well, it sure is. But you remember he had a very good season, as you mentioned, last year. And I think the year before was an exception because he's been consistent as anybody. And, you know, when you look at his career since he came to the big leagues, he's in the top 5 in every starting pitching category that you can think of. Innings pitched, games started, strikeouts, opponent's batting average, ERA. He's right there with the top guys in the game. And I think that's why the Blue Jays signed him to a long term. And I think everybody was really concerned when he had that off season 2 years ago. But he has earned this right to open up this season. And, you know, the Blue Jays, in my mind, have one of the best starting staffs in baseball. And Kevin Gausman's not going to be out very long. Bowden Francis is probably going to start the 4th game of the season. And then if Gausman comes along, he might come the 5th or 6th game of the season. But I like the pitching staff. I like where it is. Even though Romano and Swanson right now are down, I don't think there's anything long-term.
Buck, we really appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much. Look forward to your call of the game along with Dante. They're two real good lineups for the Orioles. Did a lot of folks a favor bringing along that lineup. If you like young baseball players, it's going to be a hoot.
Yeah, these two teams are going to go head-to-head. The Blue Jays have to figure out a way to beat them. The Orioles had their number last year, and they've got to turn that around.
Yeah. Thanks, Buck. Be well.
Great to be with you.
Buck Martinez. And, again, Buck and Dan will have the call of the game along with Hazel May, 1 o'clock first pitch, or 1:07 first pitch on Sportsnet. It's on Sportsnet Plus as well and on the website. Jays lineup, Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, IKF, Biggio. This is really an opening day lineup. And we talked about the Orioles. Jackson Holliday, big question in Orioles camp. Does he make the team as a second baseman? Top prospect in baseball. You heard Ben McDonald say he's kind of 50-50 right now. He's learning a little bit about playing second base. He struck out a lot this spring, hasn't drawn a lot of walks. No one doubts, though, that the power, no one doubts that the offensive capabilities are there. If you're the Orioles, do you bring him up right at the start of spring training, or do you let him go down to the minors? Adley Rutschman, one of the best players in baseball, enough said. Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser, Tyler Nevin, Kyle Stowers, Kobe Mayo, Heston Kjerstad, Connor Norby. In any other organization, people would be raving about Connor Norby. Connor Norby is vying for a spot right now with the Orioles. So there you go. You get a glimpse of the Orioles present, but a real glimpse of the Orioles' future as well. Should be a terrific game this afternoon, 1:07 first pitch. A reminder that Blair and Barker will go to our new time slot, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet a week from today. Kevin's got a couple of days more in Florida, and then he'll be back here on Friday. Before we break, want to make a quick comment about a story that kind of flowing under the radar, but has nonetheless really kind of caught our attention. The Major League Baseball Players Association had a call last night, a Zoom call, and essentially, you know, if you know anything about sports labor in the Major League Baseball Players Association, this is the union, this is the template for every sports union. It always has been. It's been a union that has an amazing track record of success. It's been a union that, you know, has really had a major impact, not just in the increase of professional sports salaries, not just baseball players' salaries, but professional sports in general. Well, if you remember last year, Major League Baseball started to incorporate. In the past, it had just been players in the 40-man roster. Major League Baseball last year started to incorporate minor leaguers into their structure. Now, I believe of 72 72 positions in the organization, 34 go to minor league players in terms of voting, in terms of having an impact in decision making. And last night, it appears as if there's been a mutiny in the Players Association. So far, Tony Clark appears okay, but Bruce Meyer, who was their lead negotiator in the last round of bargaining, there is a move to unseat him and replace him with the fellow who did a lot of the heavy lifting with the minor leaguers. And it was interesting, Greg Boris on social media just tweeting out, former PR director for the Players Association, said this is one of the reasons why for the longest time the Players Association didn't want to get involved with minor league players, because it raises a number of governance issues. It raises a number of issues. I mean, essentially, dudes who are minor league players, their set of, I wouldn't say values, but their set of worries doesn't necessarily coincide with the major league player's set of worries. It was destined to be an issue. And then you look forward to this offseason, or you look back at this offseason, all those free agents who didn't sign contracts or had to settle for contracts that were lesser in length than we thought they would. You saw J.D. Davis of the San Francisco Giants get released because of a loophole in the CBA, a loophole that was in there as part of the negotiations that Bruce Meyer was involved in. It's a fascinating story to keep an eye on. Jeff Passan of ESPN has written about it extensively. If you're into that sort of stuff, I would really suggest you take a look at Passan's article, and we'll talk about it with Jeff when we get him on later in the week. Anyhow, that's it for us today. 1 o'clock is going to be a terrific game. Lots of good young Orioles players, the Blue Jays everyday lineup. Got nothing else to do. Might as well watch some baseball. We'll talk to you tomorrow.